This podcast episode has a CC by SA 4.0 license. This license requires that reusers give credit to the creator. It allows reusers to distribute, remix, adapt, and build upon the material in any medium or format, even for commercial purposes. If others remix, adapt, or build upon the material, they must license the modified material under identical terms. Thank you. So this is the CoLab podcast, and we will begin with introducing ourselves. I am Charlie Wilson. I'm working as the communications officer for the International Permaculture CoLab. And this is Amy. Would you like to say something about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Amy. I'm the project manager for the Next Steps project in the International Permaculture CoLab, and I'm also a member of different circles, including the funding circle, the digital circle, and the general circle. And I also do some welcome and onboarding, so I wear many hats. But yeah, I think today we'll be talking about my local project, which is Finca Verde.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to speak to you today. And yeah, what can you tell us about Finca Verde?
So Finca Verde is a small 4-hectare farm in the south of Spain, specifically in the Granada region in the Alpujarras. We have centenary olives. That means basically that the trees are over 100 years old. And we have an unirrigated almond patch as well. The idea for Finca Verde, because it's such a, in a dry area and in an area that is very greatly affected by climate change, we want to have a positive impact on the local area here. We live very simply on the land. Finca Verde has a small farmhouse with two small bedrooms. So when we have volunteers over, we have somewhere where they can stay. And we also have two dogs and sometimes a visiting dog, Jackie, who's here now. The idea of the project is to transform this farm from a conventional farm. So it has been conventionally farmed for the last 40 years or so. Conventionally farmed means that pesticide and insecticide have been used on the land, including with regular soil tilling. And we want to transform the farm from that conventional type farming into regenerative agriculture farming. So in the last 2 years, we have been working quite hard at trying to transition in a way that doesn't impact the environment too badly. And so the first thing we did was basically stop tilling. We put in some green manure plants. These are plants that are complementary to the local areas, and basically planting clover and other green manure plants in order to fix more nitrogen in the soil because the soil was greatly depleted. And because there was applications of what we call salt additives in salt, let's say fertilizers, the soil was very poor. So in an effort to not so if we did nothing, basically it would just continue to be poorer and poorer and not actually improve. But by planting some green manure, we are hoping to regenerate the soil, bring life back into the soil. The microorganisms provided a home. By having a ground cover on the land, we are hoping to reduce evaporation, water evaporation. We were lucky in that the farmer previously had a quite complex irrigation system, which does help reduce water wastage. So we don't blanket water here. We only do drip water. So each tree has its own water feed. And we have also put in a black water treatment system, which is fully oxidizes the waste and makes sure that any output from that is can be watered with as well. So we're reusing all of our black and gray water in that way.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Go on.
So you're looking for simple and natural solutions. It sounds wonderful.
Absolutely. I mean, we try to live permaculture here every day. So we try to do closed loop systems in which everything that we create and all our food waste, for example, goes into the compost. The compost is used for the veggie garden. We only have a small veggie garden at the moment because we're concentrating on the more larger landscape design. And we want to make sure that people know that we also have volunteering spots, and which are short term normally, and they are really linked with learning about permaculture and regenerative farming, and also longer term spots. So we are open to receiving a family or a couple or an individual who would be willing to become a land steward here on the land, live on the land rent free. Build their own little tiny house, perhaps, and help us take care of this beautiful part of the Alpujarras.
Amazing, wonderful. And I just want to ask a couple of terms you mentioned. For the layperson, can you tell me what is green manure and what is black and grey water?
So green manure is our plants, a selection of plants. For example, clover is one. That help the soil to fix nitrogen in the soil. So by planting this, we are able to avoid using animal manures and synthetic fertilizers, so salt fertilizers. Salt fertilizers take out all the water from the soil and really don't help the soil to regenerate. So they just wash away and take away all the water from the soil when it rains. Manure is basically what comes out of an animal's butt, and this you can use on the ground. Usually we don't have animals here, so that wasn't an option that we could buy, or we could go get a gift of manure from a nearby farmer, and that's possible. But animal manure, you have to be mindful of that it could contain antibiotics and other products that the animals are ingesting. So that's one thing to think about manure. But with green manure, you're basically planting things, and that's why we call it green, because green is a plant type. If you're interested in green manure, you can look up on the internet all sorts of green manures that are specific to your area. So we made sure that whatever plants we chose to plant were compatible with this area, so that we Yeah, basically that would will be successful, that they can that it can adapt to this climate, and that we would have a successful harvest. And incidentally, in the area, some native plants are also here already present. So if we had maybe left it in a longer period, some of those might come in by being seeded around. So I know, for example, that my neighbor has a lot of white clover on his land, where he also doesn't tell he's an organic farmer. And so I would expect some of those seeds from his land to come over. And if I'm not killing those seeds, then they would take hold. But we wanted to speed up a little bit this process, and this is why we actually planted the manure rather than wait for the seeds and the wind to do their thing.
Yes, I see. Great, very clear. Thank you. And how about the grey or black water? Can you tell me shortly what this means?
So grey water is the water that you're using in your kitchen, the shower water from your washing machine. And in that respect, we make sure that water, we don't add any toxic chemicals to this. So if we're using dish soap, if we're using washing machine liquid, we are making sure we're picking ecological options, because all our water directly goes into the soil. So we make sure we make good choices there. So that's the gray water. So any water comes from your sink and so on, the washing machine and the kitchen. The black water is water that comes from your toilet. So when you flush the toilet, that is basically black water. And the black water treatment system in Spain, especially for rural areas, there are strict regulations for this. I know that on some projects, they also have dry toilets. At the moment, we don't have a dry toilet. We would like to start one soon, hopefully. The dry toilet would create what we call a human manure or humanure. And this is manure coming from humans, just just to make that connection. But the black water is basically your the water from the flush toilet that we are using. So yes, we wanted to make sure that that water is processed in a way that's eco-friendly, and that the effluent from this, so the effluent is what comes out of the system, the water that comes out of the system, can be used to water the trees as well.
Okay, great. Very interesting. And you mentioned the climate in the area where your project is. I just wonder, what challenges does this bring?
Yeah, so we're theoretically we are in a temperate climate, which means it's not a desert climate, like but it's also not very it's not too hot and it's not too cold. That's basically what temperate means. But what we're finding is that we are having hotter and hotter summers, so this is a really hard challenge here, and many months of no rain. So this farm in particular gets all its water through the irrigation system. It's a very ancient irrigation system set up by the Moors that used to be in Spain during the Ottoman Empire. And those irrigation systems still is used and maintained. And they are fed by mountain water. So we are just at the foot of the Sierra Nevada here, which is quite a big mountain range in Spain. And we are depending on snowfall and rain in order for that irrigation system to continue, right? So of course, every year we get less and less snowfall or irregulars or snowfall when you don't expect it, for example, or rain or torrential rains and so on. All they do is basically create challenges for us because the old system is not adapted well enough for these new circumstances which the climate is going through. So for us it was really important that it's not only that we take care of the water, but that the people that we are doing this with our neighbors, basically everyone who has access to this irrigation system, which is called a sequía, equally cares about it. So there's been some modifications to the sequía. It's maintained in the natural and normal way, but there's also a pipe system. So when it's very hot, then there's reduced evaporation and we get basically the farms get more water. The other challenge we face is that some of our neighbors keep animals, which they're organic goat farmers. And the law states that basically if you keep animals, the animals will take precedence over farms. So if we have here kept animals and there's limited water, our neighbors have to give us that water if there is a drought. So we are in a situation where we could go months without irrigation water, meaning that the olives will survive because they are drought hardy and they are adapting to this climate. And they're very old, so they're quite resistant and they have very deep roots into the local aquifers here. But the almonds are probably going to die because they're not irrigated normally. And the hard summers are really difficult. Some of the fruit trees might also suffer. So fruit trees, like we have a few orange trees at the bottom of our valley. And if they don't get watered, they would basically die. That's what happens to fruit trees. So yes, I think this is the hardest challenge of being here, to be able to be conscious of your natural resources and also to live through the heat. So we are at the moment in the middle of the heat wave. Here is over 40 degrees, so we spend most of our time indoors. We are privileged to be able to do so. Other people have to go out to work in the sun. So, you know, there's that, you know, how to balance this, what we're able to do as people who live here who are not native from Spain. I'm originally from Malta, and also to be able to work sufficiently within the local economy to support it and to support other people who don't have the choice of staying indoors when it's so hot.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it can be a very intense summers. Yeah, this brings me to my next question, which is, how did you come to choose this area? Did you already have a base here? What drew you to building the project in such a hot place where it can get very dry.
So I used to live in Spain before I came back to it. So I was in Spain on the coast, and then I was living in Germany for about 5 years and running an eco village before I came. So when I was here in Spain the first time, I had spent some time here in this area and I really liked it. I like the ethos of the community here, and I really enjoyed getting to know the area better. So I had some idea of what it would be like. Also, the summers, I knew, I mean, 5 years ago, it's not the same. Already it's hotter, I think, than it was then. But I'm also from Malta, so I'm kind of used to the hot climate. And when I was in Germany, I thought, well, you know, it would be nice maybe if I ever have to leave or if I decide to move on, that would be an interesting project to set up in Spain. The weather's always nice. Because it don't have much rain, and it's quite a pleasant place to be. So the project is about a 10-minute drive to the nearest town. So it's not that remote, even though when you're here it feels remote in a way because you're kind of here. It's a sort of interesting ecosystem, and we're about 40 minutes away from the nearest beach. So it's not, you know, that disconnected. If I wanted to go to Granada, which is the biggest city, it would be around maybe 1 hour and 20 minutes on the bus from my nearest town. And when I travel, that's how I travel. I slow travel on the bus and so on. So it's been pretty good to be here. And for me, it was it's not a decision I regret. The only challenge that was unexpected, I think, with this, I thought, because of the influx of people who are coming for an alternative life here, I thought it would be easier to find volunteers. And that has been really a challenge to find volunteers to come to the farm.
Yeah, sure. Okay, great. So there's lots of benefits of being in this area. And yeah, you mentioned getting in volunteers, also trying to integrate and support the local economy. I wonder if you can say something about how you get involved with the local community in different ways with your project.
So yeah, I think we really came into, we kicked off with the local economy support when the war in Ukraine started. So in our local village, there were some 60 people who, women and children who were staying here. So we decided to kick into action, and we have some language skills here. My partner is Ukrainian, so we went and helped the women who are looking for work to make their CVs in Spanish and so on and English to try and help them find work. And then from that, we had also employed some of them to do some work here at the farm, and we also do some crop sharing. And so when we have too much of something, like too many figs or too many oranges or whatever, then we also donate some of the process. We also participate in exchange events. So there's locally usually some exchange events, agricultural meetings, and we take produce that also that we can share or by donations. So in that way, we are quite participative. The other thing is also we try to employ local people because the unemployment in this area is 25% or higher. So it's really important. It feels very important to us that we make sure that we're giving back to the community and not just here as kind of consumers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Great.
it's really good.
Wonderful. Yeah, amazing. And yeah, I've been to your farm, you know, it's very big. It's obviously a lot to manage. So I wonder what kind of help you receive. Whether it's practical, financial, anything like, you know, people in the local community, what kind of support are you receiving?
So we get a lot of support. The first and biggest support, I would say, is from our local farmer. He's called José Luis. He is the first point of contact for anything farm related that needs looking at. So if something fails with the irrigation system, if I have a dispute with a neighbor, like what happened with when they were taking our irrigation water. Basically anything to do with cultivating and being part of our immediate local neighborhood type issues. So that's really a big help. Then we have sometimes volunteer help. This could be local. So for example, like when you came to visit and did some volunteering there in exchange for free rent, that was really good. Usually this is more like work related. So we would have a task and say, oh, we need someone to help us with this particular task rather than a general, I'm going to stay somewhere. We also hosted a refugee here for several months. So that was something that we considered that we could do and we did. So that was good. The Spanish government also provides some assistance. So we have, I have received a small grant for being a woman entrepreneur as a self-employed farmer. That was nice. We also get some, we have applied for some grants for having the centenary olives and keeping them. So this is an incentive from the local, from the government to do that. And there will be additional grants that we would be applicable for when we get our organic status. So as we transition, obviously we are already not applying any pesticide or insecticide or anything like this, but there's a 3-year waiting period from application until you can get it. So this is really great help. And the other thing we get is this year we're getting a grant from the International Permaculture Co-op Next Steps project, where we are participating in a research and development project to see and explore more and document the practical solutions to all the challenges that I've mentioned, the water challenge, the socioeconomic challenge in the area, and so on. So this has been really a big help. Obviously, my partner is a big help, because without the moral support, I think it wouldn't be possible. And everyone who comes here and wants to help, I think that's really great, a really great input as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sounds like, you know, there's lots of local connections and you really have this support coming, which is wonderful. And yeah, it's such a big project, such a big thing you've chosen to take on. I just wonder, how did you get started? Where did it all come from, this idea to buy this big farm?
Oh, gosh. Well, it sort of materialized over the years. So as I got more and more interested in permaculture some over 10 years ago now, and when I started teaching it, land access wasn't a thing. I was living in rented accommodation with a small garden, and thinking back now, that was very manageable. And I hardly needed any help. But when I moved to Germany specifically, and I got more involved in the running of the eco projects, and also got involved in some community projects that really appealed to me. So I really wanted to explore more this kind of notion of what could be possible at a slightly larger scale. And this is why we are looking for land stewards as well, because we recognize that it's 4 hectares is a lot of land, especially when it's terraced like it is here. Farming is difficult in a way that it's not difficult. First of all, it's difficult physically because it's a lot of manual labor, but it's difficult in a way to be financially sustainable. So we recognize that a lot of, for example, work and help that's coming actually doesn't help to make this financially sustainable or profitable in the least way possible. So this is why we give away some stuff in return for help. And we recognize that this is not a money-driven type business in a way that conventional businesses are. And this is why it's a project and not a business, really, primarily. Although we do recognize that some money has to come in order to make it sustainable.
Yeah.
So the idea was just that, to do it with other people. It was never the idea that I would be doing it on my own. I don't have any interest in doing that. I always prefer to be a part of a team. And I'm very excited to see where this project and will go and how it will evolve over time.
Yeah, amazing. Great. And if you were summing up your mission, of this project? Like, what is your overall aim in a short few sentences? What would you say to me?
I would say the mission for Finca Verde is to rehabilitate the land and be good land steward to it while living on the land simply in a permaculture way. So that's pretty much it. Very simple, and just doing what we do
Yes.
without too many overcomplications.
Great, wonderful. And yeah, you mentioned opportunities for people coming to help. So if people want to volunteer, how can they? Should they just contact you, visit a website? What should they do?
Yes, so we do have a website. It's wiki.ecohackerfarm.org. You can have a look there. You can find information about the short-term volunteering stays and also the longer-term volunteering stays. And there will also be information about events which are open to locals and also people visiting. So we have coming up in September, October, a permaculture gathering, which will be a 1 week events, so people are welcome to check that out. And if you're really interested in long-term stays and talking to us about this land stewardship opportunity, I would be very keen to chat with you. So please get in touch, and yeah, we'll take it from there.
Yeah, it's great. I think these can be wonderful opportunities for someone. Okay, so we're going to wrap up soon. And I just wonder if there's anything else you want to share, anything I didn't ask, anything that might be relevant.
I don't think so. At least nothing comes to mind right now.
Okay, great. So, yeah, let's wrap up. So, thank you for the talk. It's very, very interesting. And yeah, you have a big project on your hands, and I wish you lots of luck. I hope you have lots more support and lots more people coming to help.
Super. Thank you, Charlie, for the opportunity.
Okay, great. All right, bye bye.